Yes, welcome back to the second part of ITE 1, Module 5.
And I believe we're starting out with copy, but we're creating shortcuts. So basically, once you've created a file, you can copy it, and you can create shortcuts to it. So to do so, you right-click on an item.
Or press Shift F10 if you're not mouse-enabled.
And a menu will appear, and that's got the options. Copy, cut, create shortcuts, and I'm going to cough.
Can
you take over a second?
Oh, I can indeed. You can create shortcuts.
Pardon me.
And copying makes a duplicate of the file and puts it into a newly created folder. Hence the joke, if there was 10 cats in a boat and one jumped out, how many would be left? None, because they were all copycats. And there will be two files once you've copied it, funnily enough. One file, and you can actually put files inside folders and outside folders if you copy them to a particular folder. So you can actually have the same file name, but as long as they don't exist in the same folder, that's cool, because you can't have two files with the same name in the one folder.
Sort of makes sense, doesn't it?
It does. Both files will have the same name, and they will have the same contents, funnily enough. Cut takes the file and places it on the clipboard. The clipboard is a temporary area of storage where you can store one thing at a time, unless you're using one of the clipboard enhancers, which we're not, so you can only store one thing at a time. And once you've got it on the clipboard, you can paste it somewhere else. And this was all from the, cut, pull out your pot of clag, cut, paste sort of thing, just to make you think of what we're doing with these files, because people have trouble understanding how computers function, so they have to make it as like real-life TM as possible. Mm. And the file in the clipboard can be pasted to a new folder. In fact, if you've copied it to the clipboard, you can paste it in multiple locations, but if you cut it to the clipboard, you can only paste it once.
Yeah.
To create a shortcut, it makes a link from where the file is to the desktop, or another folder. And if the shortcut is clicked, the original file is launched, provided the shortcut hasn't broken.
And if you want to view a file, or the details of a file in Windows, basically means the same as looking at file attributes, which we did with the local students in the lab yesterday in MS-DOS. So the right window pane in the Windows Explorer will provide you with the details of the directory, folders and files, which we sort of talked about before anyway. The details that you get actually include when the file was created, or when you've done something to it, you've modified the file or folder, and the type of item it is, whether it's a Word document or an Excel spreadsheet and so on.
Well, you get a very funny thing that says unknown if Windows has got no idea. And it figures out what files are by their extension. And in fact, if you try to change a file's extension, it will warn you and go, "You're really sure you want to change this extension?" Because Windows uses the extension to identify what the file.
Mm. Also, you can also have different versions of things. So if you add a number to it, that can help you keep track of which version you were actually working in or looking for. Quite useful to do that, actually.
Yeah, and then you can add the author's name and whatever else. But that's. Okay.
Harry, you were just talking about recognising different file types.
Mm.
And there's sort of examples of some of the file types and extensions. I'll just kind of run through some of those because they're really important to understand as well. So basically, if you've got the file extension .doc, it's a Microsoft Word or WordPad document. If you've got .xls, it's a Microsoft Excel spreadsheet. A database file is a .dbf.dat for data. .txt is going to give you ASCII text, which won't have any formatting. .exe.com is an executable program.
Well, actually, .exe and .com are both executables.
Mm. And .sys, window driver files.
Or there. config.sys, which is part of DOS.
Mm.
.dll is a dynamic link library. We don't talk about what a dynamic link library is, but suffice it to say that Windows uses them a lot. And .htm or .html, and we used to have to call them .htm back in the DOS days, is an Internet Hypertext Markup Language file. And you'll find that under Windows 3.1 and DOS, they'll be called .htm, and under Windows 9X and 2K XP, they'll be called HTML.
And if you're getting
out .rft, it's RTF.
RTF, of course, rich text format.
Yes.
Get my tongue around.
That's all right.
.wks or .wky is the lowest 123 spreadsheet file.
.bmp is a Windows bitmap image.
Or you can have .jpg.
Or .gif.
.mpg.
Yes. Or .tif, which is a tagged image format.
Or .pcx.
And they're all image files. In fact, they are bitmap image files, as opposed to raster. Raster image files as opposed to vector graphics. We don't talk about vector graphics at this point.
Okay, so we're going on to copying and moving files now. So if you want to copy a file, you can right-click on the file and select copy from the pop-up menu, or you can go Control-C, copy.
Yes, in fact, you have to left-click once to select the file and then press Control-C.
Yep.
And you open the location you wish to put the file, and
you right-click on a blank area of the Windows Explorer, right-click on the pane, choose Paste.
That's right.
Or you go Control-V.
In fact, the shortcuts along the bottom with the Control key held down are Undo is Control-Z, Control-X is Cut, Control-C is Copy, and Control-V is Paste.
There's a nice little quick rundown of all the shortcuts.
Funnily enough, V doesn't exist in the word paste, but that's all right.
I know, it's interesting that shows up, isn't it?
Well, probably because it was right next to copy, I'd say.
Yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so if you want to select several files at a time, you can do that too. And you hold down the control key while you're kicking. Kicking?
Clicking.
Clicking!
You can kick the file, but you might get a sore toe.
And you will highlight them anyway.
If you wish to highlight files that are adjacent to each other, in other words, next to each other, you can hold down the Shift key and arrow up and down as you would in Word to highlight lines of text.
Mm.
And to unselect a file, you continue to hold the Control key down and you click it again. In fact, if you don't keep the Control key held down and you click without the Control key down, it unselects everything you may have selected and just selects the one you just clicked on, so be aware of that.
If you want to highlight all the files, you select the Edit option and select All from the menu on the toolbar.
Select All, in fact.
Mm.
The menu option is actually Select All.
Mm.
Mm. And you can also press, you could also press Control-A.
And if you want to unselect all the files, you just hit the Escape key on the keyboard.
You do. Once the files are highlighted, they can be moved, copied, deleted, or opened simultaneously, which means at the same time. That's what simultaneously means.
Depends which part of Australia you're from, mate.
Yeah, well, that's it.
Stress. You're right, mate.
Chuck those snags on the barbie. If you could just cut those up, that'd be good.
Or if you're on the Americans, what do they have? The old shrimp on the barbie? On the barbie, mate? I haven't.
No, I haven't either, actually. No. Searching for a file or folders, look, this is all pretty, you go start, find, and you can basically tell it, you know, what sort of bits of, in fact, it's start, find files or folders, and it's search in Windows 2000 and XP. So Windows F will also pull that dialog up if you're into those sorts of shortcut things, which we are.
Yes, we are.
And you can tell it, you know, what sort of files to find, whether you want, you know, a part of the file name or some text that's in the file, and you can sort by date and all those sorts of things, so that's all very cool. You can also do that sort of stuff in the command line if you're a power user like me, that I don't like that find thing under Windows very much at all, but to be honest. But it can help you find things, so there it is. You can either look across your entire hard disk, or you can look in specific folders.
You're also going to tell the computer where to search for things. That's most important.
It is. Well, you've got to do that before you can actually start the find, which is probably pretty good.
Mm.
And you can either do it with the mouse or you can use your Windows F and that sort of thing. So, two ways of doing that.
Yeah.
If you wish to copy files, if you want to copy files onto a floppy disk, you can highlight the file and right click and go send to 3.5-inch floppy.
And I guess these days not too many are using floppy disks much anymore, but
no,
we need to cover it because it tells us we have to.
You can also drag the selected files to the drive A icon, or if you've got a RAM disk, a flash key or RAM key or something, it could be the drive F or G icon and drop them in there.
Well, you can highlight the file or folder and then use the drop down menus to say where you'd like it to go to.
Yes,
I shall carry where to go all the time.
That's right. And in fact, she told me that the send to is actually under file, interestingly enough, I believe. And you go file send to.
Okay, and now also another useful thing is knowing about the recycle bin. Recycle bins used to temporarily delete or permanently delete files from the computer. The files remain on the hard drive until you empty the recycle bin.
Or the recycle bin fills up and you need to put more files into it.
You can also restore the files from the recycle bin to where you had them before. So in Windows 98, I don't know about the later versions, I'm going to be able to tell you, but 10% of the hard drive is allocated for the recycle bin. By default.
And you can change that if you so desire, but 10%. And once that 10% is full, if you delete more things in the recycle bin, or if a file is too big, you'll actually get a dialogue popping up going, this file is too big for the recycle bin. Do you wish to delete it permanently? And look, I would not be relying on the recycle bin if I were you. It's a good, oh my goodness gracious me thing. However, you probably should be thinking about what you're deleting in the first place, I think. Make sure you know what you're deleting. There's a recycle bin on the desktop that if you double click it, it will open show the files in the recycle bin that have been deleted. And you can right click on a particular file and select restore or delete. And it talks about restoring files. The same process will work for folders, so if you've got a folder that you've deleted by accident in the recycle bin, you can actually restore the whole folder.
Yeah, but an empty folder you can't.
No.
Not that you want to.
Well,
somebody might have a folder there that they've made and they've deleted it and can't restore it. If it's empty, cannot do it.
No.
Okay. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about the control panel, and that's a really useful to view the system properties, and
some more cynical people would say necessary tools to be using under Windows, the control panel. You're always having to tinker with something, and you can access this tool. Actually, we're talking about the system tool as well. Actually, you go to start, and then you go.
There's a system properties window that comes up then.
Ah. Actually, hang on. Just let me pause for a second. Mm-hmm. Yeah, hang on. There'll be a button here that'll do it. Okay, so we've figured out what the notes are on about now. And what they actually want you to do is go Start, Settings and Control Panel. And then from Control Panel, you can select System. Or you can hold down the Windows key and press Pause Break. And that will pop the system window straight up from anywhere in Windows. Windows Pause. The reason it's got pause break on it is because if you hold down the control key, it becomes the break key, which is why it's called pause break, not because you're going to break it. The system properties window includes a series of tabs across the top, and they let you get various information.
And the default tab is the general tab, and that actually lists information related to the system, including your operating system version, licensing information, and your system specifics.
Yes.
Those might include things like your processor type and the amount of memory that you've got.
And you'll need to use your JAWS cursor to review that one because it will not talk by default.
Certainly won't.
And the next tab in Windows prior to XP is the Device Manager. Under XP, it's actually the Hardware tab, which is an interesting differentiation. These notes were written before XP was sort of really popular. But the Device Manager tab obviously has all the devices.
And for anyone wanting to know, the maps are going to get updated, aren't they?
They are, towards the end of the year. I think there's a new one. And
I think it's in July, isn't it?
And you can view the system resources and stuff that are used. The device manager can be also used to update device drivers, disable and enable devices, and change resource settings.
And the third tab you come across is the hardware profiles tab, which is a tab that allows you to have different hardware configurations for the same operating system. And most people, and I'm not saying us because we're all like tinkerers here, most people don't need to use the hardware profiles. But if you are using a laptop...
And look, it just so happens we are.
And it just so happens we are.
Yes.
You have made one profile for the system, one is docked, and one for it's not docked.
Yes.
Then there's a fourth tab, a performance tab. La da la. Da 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 da.
Not quite that sort of performance, I'm afraid, Geraldine.
Oh, what a shame.
The performance tab, don't give up your day job.
He keeps telling me that.
this displays the information about the performance of the system, and it allows you to change settings such as the amount of virtual memory that's used and the file system stuff, which you probably shouldn't be mucking around with unless you really know what you're doing. But hopefully after this course you will.
Well, hopefully, yes. Okay, and I'm sure they will. Now we're going to talk about the printers and printer options and that sort of thing, changing to bulk printers, viewing the progress of any of the print jobs and all that sort of stuff. So to open a document from an installed printer, you click on the file menu and select print. I'm not waiting for Kerry to jump in there.
Well, what's wrong with that? That's what
you
do.
No, nothing's wrong with it. Nothing's wrong with it. Just,
or you can press Control-P.
That's what I'm waiting for.
Ah.
I'm missing your
Q. P. I said Control-P, not Control-Q.
Dun-dun.
That's right, two elephants fell off a cliff. Now.
I'm
going to
hit him later.
And then you select...
Might enjoy it.
That's right. So we go to the Start menu and... You can also go to the Start Settings Control Panel and get into printers, and you can actually look at the different printers in there and do all sorts of things.
Yeah, and then you get a printer window opening that allows you to select the options to print the entire document or just the page, or you can also, which is very handy, a range of pages. So nothing worse than when you've got a 50-page document you want to print, but you've got there and you only want to print a couple of pages and you sending the whole lot to the printer. You only want a couple of pages, so you can actually select the page range. So if you've got pages 2 to 10, you can just get 2 to 10.
You can also print multiple copies and change the layout so you can actually shrink it down so that nobody can read it, but the four pages fit on one sheet. And you can also select the qualities such as draft, regular, and really...
All sorts of things, letterhead, non-letterhead if you're in the business.
That's right. To add a printer, you use the Add Printer Wizard. And that's under printers, which you can get at through My Computer, or you can actually go through Start Settings Control Panel Printers, Add Printer. And there's a whole lot of steps on how you do that, but essentially you go to the you go through the wizard and it asks you what sort of printer you've got, and you can either say you have a disc or you can go through that wizard.
And there's a whole lot of stuff on that on the website, so they can look that up.
I think so, yep.
The important thing is that when you've got it all set up, do a test. Print page?
Print test page is a good idea. Also be aware that a lot of printers come with their own installation software that don't require you to go through that way. You actually run the software and it installs the drivers for you and does all your head alignment and that sort of thing. So that's all very important.
You can actually change the default printer too, so that you can select the printer you want it to go to, as opposed to saying the default one, you might want to go to printer 2, or you might have 3 or 4 different printers on your network. You can just go to and select the one you want. To change your default printer, you right click or tab on the new default printer. Then you'd select the option to set the printer as the default, and then a check mark will appear on the new default probe.
Printer.
Blech, thank you. Blech.
There we go.
Printer. I'm just having trouble with my mouth this morning.
To view print jobs, the The desktop print manager displays the print jobs, which you can have a look through, and which ones are started, which ones are finished, and that sort of thing. Print manager may be accessed by double clicking the printer icon on the taskbar. Desktop.
Also, access it by going through the start menu to control panel and selecting the printers.
That's right.
When you double click or select the printer, a window displays the current jobs.
It does. And so if you've got a fast printer, you'll actually see them right in front of your very eyes. They'll disappear.
And you can get options in the printer menu, like you pause printing or purge print documents and properties, etc. And you can also delete print jobs if you get a printer malfunction. How often does that happen?
Quite regularly.
Quite regularly. Yeah.
Sometimes it jams and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
If you've selected the wrong document. Yeah, you can. You can stop that before the whole thing goes to the printer. Mm. Be warned though, the printers are pretty fast, and especially with network servers, often your document can be dumped to the printer before you know it. So do make sure you know what you're printing. Mm. But you highlight the document, and you select delete, and it will ask you.
Another sort of pretty important function that you can access through the control panel is the add or remove programs. And it's to, as it says, remove installed programs, to install Windows-specific components that were not installed initially, and to create a Windows startup disk.
I think I've got a pause. I've unpaused.
Mm. Oh, have you?
Yeah, what's it recommended to do?
I'm going to hit him later.
Well, okay.
I'm coughing and spluttering away, and he's unpaused me.
It is recommended.
Yes.
To use the add remove programs thing to install and remove programs. It is.
It's also recommended that if you don't want someone playing tricks on you, you run the total recording yourself.
That's right. And you will ensure that programs are installed and uninstalled correctly. And that's important, because otherwise you get little bits of program left all over your hard drive.
And the other thing that's interesting is the add remove hardware utility.
Yes.
It automates the addition of a new piece of hardware to the system. So basically the process it goes through is a wizard searches the computer for the new hardware, and then it installs the appropriate drivers. If it doesn't find the appropriate driver, the wizard provides the ability to manually select the type of device from a list and installs the drivers from a specific location.
Now the display and sounds are two tools that are useful when changing the appearance and stuff of your computer. The displays and sounds thing associated with Windows.
You can have lots of fun in this area.
You can. You can change your screen to be lime green on dark brown if you really want to. The display utility can be accessed either by selecting it from the control panel or by right-clicking the desktop and selecting
Properties.
Yes. This will allow you to set a screensaver, change the background, and change the look and feel TM of Windows, as well as changing the display resolution.
It's also useful for those of us who are vision impaired, as you have the ability to customise many of the varied settings. So you can change, fiddle around with your colour contrast, your font sizes, and all that sort of thing.
Now the irony is that even when you do this, and this is something to be aware of, you can change all the font sizes and stuff for Windows, but as soon as you jump on the internet, if people have locked their font sizes down and stuff on the World Wide Web, you will find that the fonts are just the same size as they always were on the web page. So it's always important when you're authoring web pages, rather than specifying font sizes in specific point sizes, such as 12 point or 14 point, select them as +2, -2, so that it actually changes from the default up by 2 points or down by 2 points. So just a little bit of handy hint there. The sounds utility will allow you to choose sounds for your different system events, and that can be useful if you don't have a lot of vision. You can sort of get some sort of idea as to what's going on.
You can also have a coordinate the backgrounds, a look and feel of it, the sounds, so you had a really funky sort of computer, eh?
Well, that's right, and that's you can also use what we call a theme, and that will do all of those actually. It'll do all the sounds and that all at the same time. So, for example, I have an aquarium theme on my computer, and once I click on that, you get all sorts of water bubbly noises and dolphins jumping out of the things. No, it's my aquarium theme. So that's definitely worth having a tinker around in there.
I'm going to go on now to talk about the system tools and the registry. And here we go again, because we're going to be talking about the hierarchical database. Now, if something's coming up lots, you can bet your life it'll be an exam. I know we mentioned that earlier, but if anyone was asleep then, there it is again.
There we go. And the registry just happens to be one of these hierarchical databases. And it's used to manage the information that is needed by Windows operating system and a whole stack of programs.
Mm.
Older versions of Windows stored this stuff in ini files, and they were easy for users to edit and change and mess up.
I like the mess up bit.
But they were also scattered across multiple directories on the hard drive, so you had to know where the ini file you wanted was.
Mm.
And Microsoft managed to put this into a conglomerate mess called the registry.
And it basically stores all the files in a more secure type location. Registry is made up of system.dat and user.dat files. And the system.dat file contains information about the hardware in the system. You're also going to get questions on these in the exam.
Yep.
User.dat file contains user-specific information. Apparently Windows 98 can still use the system ini and mini-ini files.
And they can actually override what's in the registry, so watch out.
Mm. And they were designed to run applications for 3.x.
Windows 3.x, isn't it?
Mm, Windows 3.x, sorry, yes.
Since the release of Windows 98, the registry contains 3 files.
And I can tell you, boom, boom, this will be in the exam.
You got system.dat, user.dat, and policy.pol. And policies are how you can decide what users can and can't do on your computer. And yes. The functions of the system.dat and the user.dat are the same. And obviously policy.pol is all new.
Yeah.
In Windows 98.
I just sort of want to talk about regedit and scanreg now. So we mentioned that the registry is a hierarchical database.
It is a hierarchical database. Just to mention hierarchical database again in case you come across it in the test.
You just might happen to come across it.
That's right.
Hierarchical database.
And that can be viewed by using regedit. And you do that by going to start run regedit.
And the registry basically displays the registry in a format that is similar to the Windows Explorer format. And scanreg.exe can be used with many of the 9X operating systems to back up or repair the system registry.
Yes, your mileage may vary, limit of 1 per customer, all that sort of thing. It is important that you know what you're doing before you start editing the registry. One misstep and you can render your system unbootable, which is where the next stuff's going to help out.
Mm.
It's going to make sure we're definitely recording. Oh, we are, you know, we're at 28 minutes and 36 seconds. Okay.
Okay, and then we talked about the MS Config,
the startup menu, and safe mode.
Well, MS Config is a great tool for Windows 98 and onward and ME, including ME.
Yes.
Not included in Windows 95, though.
No.
It allows you to control the system, how the system started. And it's going to provide you with quick access to the important Windows configuration and initialization files, which include config.sys, autoexec.bat, systemini, and winini files.
Sounds like a horse with a stutter, doesn't it? Yeah. Okay.
And it also allows you to select what programs are loaded automatically when you turn the computer on. Only the required system files are listed in the startup menu. And not a good idea to remove them.
No, bad things happen.
No, and that's why we say only advanced users should edit these files. Because basically, someone who's new to it might not know what the files are used for.
I'd say that definitely.
I'll know about that. Oops. Yep. Oops.
Yeah, that's right. When the operating system is loaded, it checks the startup menu in config.sys for programs that are listed.
And there's those programs are initialized on startup.
They are, they're automatically loaded. This also can also be useful to enable you to troubleshoot problems that may occur during the boot up process.
Which brings us to another method of troubleshooting, and that's safe mode, which is very handy. It allows you to load Windows without specific device drivers or allocated resources. So basically in safe mode, only the basic user interface and the generic drivers are loaded so that the system is operable.
And as I said in the lecture yesterday, the screen will drop into 640 by 480. So get ready for the sighted person that may be helping you to go, everything's gone really big. And that's important.
Yeah. We're always slinging off the sighted board,
aren't we? Well, it's important to know that they're
going
they're going to say this, and that the screen's gone really big, and that's quite... that's a problem for them, because the stuff that usually fits on the screen won't. They end up having to sort of run their mouse from here to here to Sydney and back to get to things that would normally fit on the screen quite nicely.
Go to see people who don't know how far Sydney is from Perth. It's a long way. I think about 5,000 kilometres or something.
Oh, it's 4.5 hours on a really fast jumbo jet. I tell you what, your arms get tired flying over there.
My broomstick handles it quite well,
actually. Oh, fair enough. I didn't know you were Geraldine Potter. Okay, now we'll move on to wscript.exe, an hwconfig, and asd.exe.
So the wscript.exe command basically allows you to configure the properties relating to Windows scripting hosts, which is the Windows scripting host scripts allows you to script easily to run within the operating system.
It does. Not easy to say that. hwconfig is a utility that provides a detailed collection of information about the computer. If the proper switches are not provided, though, it'll not provide the desired information, which makes a bit of sense. Garbage in, garbage out. Mm. And the UI switch is used when running this program, which enables us to get a detailed list of information about the computer.
So the asd.exe is used to skip a driver when the operating system fails during boot up. And basically that troubleshooting utility should be used when there is a problem with a driver that can't be solved by booting in safe mode.
Which usually means things are pretty bad. Mm. Once that happens, you're really in the shtook.
We're
getting
some interesting stuff.
We are.
Preparing a hard drive for operating system installation.
I'm just going to pause for a second.
Okie
dokie. Well, oops, we're almost out of time today, so we're going to do preparing a hard disk next recording, so I'm sure you'll all be waiting eagerly for that one. And so until next week, it's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
Yes. All right. We'll talk to you all soon.
Bye, everyone.